My subconscious redirects my hand to the folder for when I was 10 years old. The first files are expected. School documents, papers and grades, government documents, social security card, birth certificate, criminal record, and more. But what follows is a sucker punch to my soul. There are photos. Family photos. All my family photos going back generations. Videos, too. And virtual recordings. Just knowing that all of this exists is nearly enough to undo me. I have no memory of these records. I believed my past to be lost, along with my parents. Parents who were still alive and cancer-free, on Earth, with the blue sky, the green everything. Life as it was meant to be. I flinch when a virtual recording starts, triggered by the VCC misunderstanding my shock gestures. I move to stop the playback when my mother's voice fills my ears.
Willie, where are you hiding?
Willie. The name triggers a cascade of suppressed memories and emotions. The only person to ever call me Willie was my mother. It was reserved for her. Anyone else who attempted to use the name got chastised by me, and if they used it again, my reaction involved fists. I haven't heard the nickname since her passing.
I'm coming to find you.
I turn to a view of my childhood dining room, old world Earth with touches of modern living. The home was modern, but dressed up with a 20th century sense of style, reflecting my parents' strong sense of family. That's what they said. My mother, Cecilia, is dressed for work in bright blue full-body coveralls. She was an electrical engineer, worked on the ships that transported humanity, myself included, to Mars. For all I know, some of her designs might even be part of the Galahad. She stalks, crouched down, fingers hooked. A mother troll. But she's all smiles, and she's clearly pretending to not know my 10-year-old self is sitting beneath the table beside her. I drink in the scene. The crystals hanging from the window shades, sending little rainbows dancing across the white walls. The painting of a lighthouse, which went out of style when people stopped using the seas to ship goods. The white and yellow area rug. I remember the way it smelled, and how it felt beneath my still small fingers. I walk around the virtual space, circling the table opposite my mother, afraid to let her get close enough to crack open my soul and pour it out on the floor. A giggle from beneath the table makes her stop. I crouch in time with my mother, squatting to see my younger self squeal at being discovered. I was a naive 10-year-old, innocent and childlike, until my parents' deaths. They succumbed to cancer in the same year, within months of each other. When I was younger, I believed that my mother died because she was heartbroken by my father's passing. But now I'm pretty sure it was because of their work, designing and wiring starships, exposed to a menagerie of toxins. But their work was for a greater good, like mine was supposed to be. They became my inspiration. And now, bearing witness to my loving mother, I hope to still do her proud. How can I fix this? I ask her, as my child self crawls out from under the table and into her arms. How can I make everyone's deaths mean something?
Love you, Willie, she says, kissing my young forehead.
Tell me what to do, I say. Please. The recording can't hear me, I know that. I'm just desperate.
Why are you and Dad coming home late?
Young me asks.
Medical review, she says. Not a big deal.
But it was a big deal. This was the day they found out. They didn't tell me. Not right away. But my vague memory of this day is reconstituting in my memory. My parents were different when they got home, far later than they said they would be. This was the day.
Can I VR?
She shakes her head.
You spend too much time in that thing. A little more reality would do you some good.
You know he's coding, right?
My father's rich voice comes through the foyer, down the steps from their bedroom, where he's getting ready for the day, dressing in his own bright blue coveralls.
Please,
I beg. She kisses my head. 2 hours tops. My father enters the room. bright blue, smiling, bald head gleaming. He's as close to sparkling as a person can be, but his luster will be faded by the day's end.
You really should try his progs. He's got a future.
My mother rolls her eyes, but says, when we get home. Kisses me again. Smiles. I expect to be impressed. They got home too late. She never did get to see my work. The playback ends, and I realize my mother, who really didn't like anything virtual, had been making a VR recording. For me, I decide, and I slip back out of the program looking at the list again. There are hundreds of files, each a lost moment from my childhood, a digital treasure, but too painful to repeat. Running from the crushing weight inside my chest, I open the Galahad folder and dive headfirst, without looking, into the concrete slab that is my recent history. 12. Unlike the VR recordings of my youth, I clearly remember the events recorded in the Galahad folder. It covers the past 21 years of my life, 10 of which were spent inside a cryobed. Since I'm not really interested in the past 10 years, I narrow my search to the previous 11. Thanks to a sprained ankle that took a good month to heal and another 3 to stop hurting, I'm able to rule out my first 8 years in the program. Whatever was done to me to make my body heal rapidly was done after that injury. I narrow things down further by jumping into random VR recordings of trainings, tests, and doctor's visits. When I'm nervous, I pick at my fingers, peeling up slivers of skin, sometimes drawing a bead of blood. I tried to stop the habit when a psych eval labeled it as minor self-mutilation, but lifelong habits are hard to stop. I move forward through the events of my own life, trying hard to ignore the furtive glances shared between Tom and Capria while in my presence, missed by me, but captured by the army of VR cameras arrayed throughout Command. I'm not sure how Command missed my puppy dog eyes. Maybe they didn't. I was paired with Capria, after all. But why would they break protocol for me? My emotional attachment should have gotten me scrubbed from the mission. But here I am, the lone survivor. Well, not quite lone, but close enough. And the why of that conundrum is still unknown. So I push past my uncomfortable past and focus on the hands. I move through time, pausing to look at my hands once a day, racing toward the Galahad's launch. There are a few false alarms where I manage to kill the habit long enough for my fingers to heal, but the tiny wounds always return. After a few hundred days, I'm in the zone, scrolling through days and looking at my fingertips with such efficiency that when the system pings an alarm chime, I try to access the recording 3 more times. Then the shrill ding and red classified icon snaps my mind out of its loop. Classified? I ask no one. I'm a ranking member of this crew. While Tom's foolery locked me out of many files and access to the database was password protected, these historical documents, which are literally ancient history, nearly as far from the present as the first moon landing from Jesus, should be easy to access. But they're not. And that means someone didn't want me to see them. I launch a dozen brute force attacks on the encryption, starting them off with Command's password structure, a single-digit number, a common name, a year starting at the millennium, all of which are nearly always followed by a pound, ampersand, or percent symbol. Cracking the password shouldn't take long, assuming Tom didn't synergize these records. During the wait, I access the files of the 12 crew members who survived Tom's mania and escaped to Cognata. Amidst the massive amount of personal history, I find 6 of the 12 have encrypted classified documents during the same range of dates as mine. Are they like me? Is that what helped them survive? And if they are like me, does that mean they could still be alive on Cognata? What the hell did they do to us? I try to think of something that unified these 6 crew members and myself. The most noteworthy of the bunch is Captain Edward Blair, the man in charge of saving humanity. But what's his connection to the others? 4, like me, are from Earth, but the rest are Martian-born. We're a mix of cultures and races, not that there are many true racial divides anymore. White,
black, and everything in between stopped being important when most people had mixed parentage somewhere in their past. Look at this from Command's perspective, I think. What separates these people from the others? What separates me? I shake my head, frustrated. I can't see it. A bugle sounds a charge in my ears. The notification is jarring and not nearly as funny as I used to think. I make a mental note to change the sound and slip out of the crew's records and back into mine. The classified password has been revealed. 4 Connolly 2027%. I shake my head. The name and date reveal that whoever set the password knew their space history, referencing the first manned mission to Europa. But for a password, the name and date should really be random. It's sloppy security, clearly done by a tech jock not cleared for the Galahad's crew. I punch in the digits and access the folder. There are 3 documents inside. The first is a medical record, which I already know will be gobbledygook, so I ignore it. The other 2 files are VR recordings, one labeled procedure, the other labeled explanation. Believing the medical record and procedure will leave me with more questions than answers, I opt for the explanation VR recording. The title suggests that Command might have anticipated someone would eventually access these files, but I'm hardly prepared for how on the nose the message is.
Computer Science Officer William Chenock, welcome.
The mustached man is a stranger, but his smile is welcoming and his demeanor excited. The hair on his lip seems to be compensating for the lack of hair atop his head. His red coveralls mark him as a medical professional, but offer no clue as to his specialty, though I have my suspicions, which he supports a moment later.
My name is Jared Adams. I'm the lead geneticist overseeing the preparation of Galahad's crew. My goal is simple, to keep you alive. And if you're watching this, it's likely because my work proved successful. Perhaps you've noticed how quickly you heal, or how you're resistant to Cognata's gravity, or maybe you're simply a few hundred years old.
He pauses to smile, and I have time to think.
They made me immortal?
On the surface, that sounds great. In my current predicament, vaulting into the depths of space alone, it sounds like actual hell. His smile falters.
You're probably wondering why you weren't told ahead of time.
Fucking right.
The truth is, we didn't know if it would work. There's a good chance you'll never even see this video. For all we know, the changes made to your genetic code could turn your insides to slurry during cryosleep. But the rigors of a new planet, especially one with the gravity of Cognata, will require an alternation to the human genome. Without it, humanity will be unrecognizable within a few generations, if it survives at all.
Adams holds his hands up like he can sense my growing outrage.
It's a lot, I know. But there isn't a single part of this mission that isn't experimental. Something like this has never been attempted before, and frankly, this mission is more important than your sensibilities about right and wrong. Did we alter your DNA without consent?
Yes. He leans in close, all conspiratorial, blocking out the Stark laboratory behind him.
But are you alive when you shouldn't be?
His chair squeaks as he leans back, satisfied arms propped up behind his head.
Next question, he says, once again predicting my thoughts. Why you, and why not everyone? You undoubtedly know that there are 8 of you. Perhaps you're the last surviving members of the crew. Perhaps you're wondering why your crewmates are aging while you are not. That doesn't matter. What does matter is that you're exceptional. The 8 of you represent humanity's best chance at not just reproduction, but becoming something better.
Command, doesn't just want humanity to survive, we want it to thrive. And that's going to take time. A lot of time. But with your guidance, all of you, we feel confident that this is not the end.
But they got it wrong. Tom was better. He just hid it to protect his true self.
But maybe skill wasn't the only qualification. Maybe character was taken into consideration. Since Adams isn't actually clairvoyant and psychic, I don't think he'll clear up that mystery.
but he does tackle the next question in my mental queue. As for why not everyone? It's simple. If the alterations to your DNA, the details of which are contained in the medical records and procedure files accompanying this VR record, failed, and you all died, the human race would still have a chance of survival, albeit limited.
Yeah, that didn't really work out, I say. Pause.
The playback freezes. I walk around the man in the VR, looking at his laboratory, devoid of personnel. It's clean. Some of it packaged. They'd finished, I think, when this recording was made. And we were still alive and probably showing signs of regeneration without even realizing it. I look into his eyes and see pride. Maybe in me, his creation, his neo-human. Or maybe just with himself. His work. Why didn't you alter your own genetic code, I ask, and come up with the answer on my own? Well, because you're a smart man. Immortality is a curse. Life eternal, at least in the physical world, will become a kind of torture, even if not trapped alone on the Galahad. If the escaped crew manages to reproduce on Cognata, endless generations will come and go, the brevity of their lives a continuous and painful experience. I've heard it said that no parent should outlive their children. It's life's worst potential pain. And for people made ever living by atoms, that pain is destined to repeat itself until the end of everything. But that might still be better than solitude. Short of flying into a star, suicide isn't even a viable option. I could launch myself into the vacuum of space, but who's to say I wouldn't survive, frozen and trapped in my own mind? I got a taste of that existence in the failed cryogenic sleep, and I'm in no hurry to repeat the experience for eternity. The reality of my situation, made certain by the few answers Adams has already provided, settles into my gut like molten lead, weighing me down and consuming me from the inside out. My legs weaken. Despair drives me to the floor. I sit beside Adams, eyes on the grated metal floor. There's no way out of this. No escape from my new reality. I need to build one, I say, a plan congealing in my mind. While part of me says impossible to the emerging plan, the rest of me says there is time. Not yet, I say to myself. I still have a mission, and there's a good chance that even after the 140-plus Earth years, thanks to Einstein's special theory of relativity, I've been away from Cognata. Some members of the crew might still be alive, and unlike me, they have no idea why. I need to at least try to get back to them. The Galahad and its technology, resources, and troves of knowledge will make their lives better, and give me people with whom I can spend eternity. But to do that, I need to beat Synergy, wrest control of the ship's navigational controls, and figure out how to plot a new course. The final two steps should be relatively easy. Everything I need to know is contained somewhere inside Gal's memory, and I have time to learn. But beating Tom's security, that problem could take as long to beat as I have time to live. Forever. I lift the VR headset from my head and lie back on the VCC's floor, staring up at the ceiling 50 feet above. I lift my real wrist and look at it for the first time in how long. Gal, how long was my last VR experience? The neither male nor female voice replies, 212 hours. Jeez, I say. Though I was in VR for nearly 9 days, I feel no ill effects. I'm physically and mentally fine. Better than fine. It would work, I think. With the right prog, I could escape. Not yet. I consider going for a shower or a snack or exercise, but I don't need any of them. So I get back to work, slipping the VR headset on and doubling my efforts to break through Tom's security. I won't emerge for another 5,217 hours. 13. It's settled. I'm immortal. There's no doubting it now. Not only did I find confirmation from Jared Adams, the man who tinkered with my genetic code,
But I also spent the last 217 days fully immersed in VR, without a break. I'm slightly disoriented. Part of my brain is telling me that the VCC isn't virtual, that Galahad isn't real. But I have a lifetime of experience telling me otherwise. The VR headset is in my hands. I can feel the floor and smell the slight ozone tang of the large room. Had I used the virtual skin's face mask, which simulates smells and tastes by spritzing chemical nanoparticles into the nose and mouth, the illusion would have been even more convincing. While my eyes and ears were fooled by the long stint in VR, I'd been smelling the air in this room for the better part of a year. As I stand alone and quiet in the VCC, I start to wonder why I left. There are games in VR, movies, distractions, virtual people to interact with. None of it's real, I think. As convincing as VR is, some part of me will never accept it as a suitable replacement for reality. And after 217 days inside, bashing my virtual head against Tom's firewalls, playing countless games developed over the past few hundred years, and watching every conceivable VR movie, even the lewd ones, especially the lewd ones, I'm left feeling hollow. Empty. The void inside me is as deep and vast as the one surrounding Galahad. Shit, my voice echoes. Shit! I want to smash the VR headset on the floor to vent my real-world anger in a physical way, but the tech jock in me keeps me docile. I leave the VCC, enter the VR staging room, and put my equipment away. The visa stings as it stretches out my skin and peels away like the duct tape I used when I still lived on Earth. Like screwdrivers, duct tape is no longer really used, but my father swore by the stuff, and I found good uses for it, making bows and arrows, traps, and other real-world contraptions that interested me before I was seduced by the not-real. My mother's words. And she was entirely wrong. That I have to fight to get the stuck-on virtual skin off of my body says a lot about my personality. My obsession with VR had always been tempered by my humanity, and my shame about the idea of wearing adult diapers, but now... 217 days... A balanced person would have maintained a reasonable schedule, would have kept showering and eating and exercising and shitting, needed or not. Those are part of what make us human. But the moment I didn't need them, I gave them up. And for what? The not real. All said and done, once hygiene became a non-problem, I'm not all that dissimilar from Tom. Without the changes to my DNA... 10 years in conscious cryosleep probably would have driven me insane, too. Then I'd be the one in a diaper nest of congealed shit. Instead, I'm slightly fused to my virtual skin. But only slightly. I peel free of it and let my real skin breathe. It's red and irritated, but only for a moment. Standing stark naked in front of my locker, I consider going nude. The air is perfectly comfortable, and there's no one around to judge... Or ogle. My altered DNA has given me the unearned physique of an athlete. What can I do, I wonder. Training for the mission was difficult and included a painful physical regimen. I never enjoyed it. Those 2 hours a day lifting weights, running laps, and stretching were as close to physical torture as I have ever experienced. It got easier with time, but not much. But now... I look down at my body, wondering what it can do. After dressing in my coveralls, I hit the gym. The space is vast, twice the size of the VCC, allowing room for a track which surrounds a collection of torment devices meant to improve the human physique. The arched ceiling is illuminated by a projection of a cloud-filled blue sky fringed by trees and the occasional bird. The psychological effect is nice, but it pales in comparison to the truly virtual. It's been a long time, but I remember most of the old training routine. I kick things off with some stretching. It actually feels good, and a measure of peace works its way into my muscles before I set them to work on some push-ups. Back when I was first recruited by command, my first attempt at push-ups was embarrassing. My arms shook on the second rep and failed to achieve the third. By the time our mission launched, I could do 60. In a row. I was proud of it. Like I'd unlocked some kind of gamer achievement.
but it was still fewer than all of the men and most of the women. Capria could pound out twice as many. No wonder she wasn't interested. Not that Tom was much better. Fueled by now ancient shame, I set to the push-ups like a man in a movie montage. At first, I grunt with each push. Then I realize I don't have to and work in silence. With each push, I feel like I'm getting tired, but then on the way down, I feel refreshed. I'm not sweating, not out of breath, and my muscles show no sign of tiring. I stop at 300, crushing Captain Blair's 267 push-up record. I could do this all day. Exercise, for someone who gets no benefit from it, not even pain, is no fun. It's like playing a game in God mode. The lack of challenge discourages me. Self-improvement will not be the distraction I had hoped it would be. I leave the gym and its artificial sky behind. After so long in VR, I'm beginning to crave it again. I shake my head, walking through the Galahad's gleaming hallways, hoping to get lost and then have to solve the mystery of where I am. But every door and intersection is so well labeled that even that is impossible. My wandering takes me back to the cryo chambers. This, at least, provokes some new emotions, which are uncomfortable but more interesting than the rampaging boredom that is my life. I pause in front of each frigid corpse, warming the glass with my hands and looking at their still faces. Some of them look asleep, eyelids closed, bodies relaxed. These were the lucky ones, whose deaths probably happened before they even woke up. The rest stare back at me in wide-eyed terror, silently screaming, "You did this! You killed me!" "It wasn't me," I tell the dead. And then I freeze, hand held to glass, looking down on a face that looks like just another member of the peaceful dead, but it's not. It's Capria. Alive. Still. I look at her cryo bed's control panel. My index finger twitches, lifting, but the rest of my arm denies that small desire to wake her. I wouldn't be alone. I could have a real conversation, hear a real voice besides my own. But how quickly would that conversation take to become horror? I can't wake her up. Not until I turn the Galahad around. Not until I forgive her. I'm in this for the long haul. Tom's encryption guaranteed it, and until my situation changes, I'm on my own. But I don't have to be. Ideas I've considered and push away resurface. I try to find flaws in my logic, but given the circumstances... I have a few options, I tell Capria. They range in severity. First, I beef up Gal's AI, give it a voice. Female, obviously. Make her crush the Turing test. That would be something, at least. Next, I could give her a body. A robot. I know, they're out of fashion, but it could be done. Autonomous robots turned out to be a fad. The uncanny valley came and went just as quickly as people realized that humanoid robots weren't as good at being human as the real thing. Aside from the sexual deviant, most people lost interest in humanoid robots, and the industry ended where it began. Robots were still used in most other facets of labor, from fine surgery to vast construction and war, but they didn't coexist with people the way so many science fiction writers had predicted. But that doesn't mean I couldn't build something autonomous for Gal. It would be a strange kind of real-world company, but it would be something. It wouldn't be enough. I lean my palms on the side of Capria's cryobed, dipping my face down to the glass. Our noses are just 12 inches apart. It's the closest I've ever been to her. And for the first time, her proximity has no effect on me. Her spell has been broken. I need to escape from this hell, from you, from all of it. Resolve pulls me back up, and I feel like I should say goodbye. This might be the last time I see her, or speak to her. If it works, it will work. The dueling inner monologues annoy me, but propel me from the room without looking back. In a life everlasting, largely free of challenges aside from solitude, having a goal to work toward feels good. It's going to take a long time to get right, but unlike Tom's encryption,
I can handle this problem with my own brain and solve it in a fraction of the time. Most of the work is already done. Gal is the most sophisticated AI ever created. Some of her code written by me and by Tom. I just need to make her a little better, a little less predictable while steering clear of ambition. I need to make her creative, like a person, but even more so. AIs have created some of the most stunning pieces of art, both physical and digital, of the modern era. Turns out that what is pleasing to the human eye can be quantified, broken down to ones and zeros, and regurgitated into paintings, sculptures, and drawings capable of provoking profound emotions, despite the creator feeling nothing. But I need more than that from Gal. I need her to create a world, sounds and smells. That's the easy part, ones and zeros. But the hard part, what no AI has yet to achieve convincingly, is writing a story, and not just any story. It needs to be as convincing as reality, because it will be my life. So it needs to be long. Forever long. Or at least until my brute force attack on Tom's security breaks through. The key is that it needs to be so engaging that, given enough time, I will forget my real life. My years and the Great Escape will become my new reality, all of it constructed by Gal without me having any part in the story's construction, but with the outcome being skewed toward happiness, contentment, and peace of mind. Obviously. "Goodbye, world," I say 10 minutes later, re-entering the VCC in a fresh virtual skin. I place the headset on and jump into the virtual, where Gal's code can be manipulated. Hello, world. 14. What is reality? The answer should be simple. The physical world humanity experiences through its 5 senses. But is it really that easy? The first problem is that not everyone experiences reality in the same way. Some experience less, the blind, the deaf, and some experience more, seeing hallucinations or feeling phantom limbs after they've been amputated. People with synesthesia can see sounds, hear tastes, and feel what they see. Not every mind is the same, and so the definition of reality can shift depending on the observer. In a way, the ability for the same reality to vary drastically between different people was probably the root cause for some of history's greatest wars. If everyone on Earth experienced reality in the same way, there would be very little to disagree about. But people disagree about everything, even facts. Does God exist? The answer to what seems like a yes or no question can actually branch out in hundreds of different directions, each with thousands of caveats, disclaimers, and belief systems. For me, the question has always been moot, and brings me to the same cosmic question. Where did reality come from? I have a hard time believing that an all-powerful being beyond human comprehension willed the universe into existence. But I find it equally preposterous that everything came from nothing, and random chance and chaos led to the creation of a universe full of laws. Granted, nothing isn't the term generally used. It's closer to everything came from something infinitesimally small and dense, which is science speak for nothing, as long as it doesn't break the laws of physics and does less than nothing, which is also not scientifically possible. The debate used to keep me up at night, in part because of the mystery, but also because everyone else around me seemed so certain about the reality they'd decided to back. Choosing to narrow reality into a single belief system based solely on human experience seems insane to me. And perfectly rational. Belief brings order to chaos. Without God, humanity would have never left the trees or caves or wherever our ancient ancestors used to hang out. Belief in a higher power came paired with a mind's evolution. Questioning life and the development of morality is what separated people from the beasts. Of course, the very same mental acuity that came from asking and answering questions, science, ultimately led to Earth's undoing and left me stranded on the Galahad. Move on, I tell myself, manipulating Gal's code while contemplating the nature of reality. I would normally try to clear my mind while coding, but creating a convincing reality is my current goal, and if I can't simulate the strange ebb and flow of the real thing, I'm never going to forget that it's all phony. Philip K. Dick, one of the few classic science fiction writers I've read, explained reality as that which, if you stop believing in it, does not go away. That's what I need to create. That's what I need Gal to create for me. I'm not building a virtual world. I'm building the architect, the composer, the writer. I'm building God. Okay, that's too far, I say to myself. I'm ultimately undecided about the God thing, but on the off chance the universe wasn't a cosmic accident, I don't really want to offend its creator. And since I very well might be one of two remaining human beings, the Galahad might very well be the omniscient's sole focus. Sorry, I say to maybe God. It's not that I don't appreciate what you made, you know, if you actually made it, but I'm done. This, I wave my hands around the VR space, but indicating the real world I know surrounds me, including Galahad and the vast nothing surrounding the ship. It's too much. Seriously. Forever separate. Forever alone. This is hell, and I'm not even dead. I stop the dance that is coding, which I can do while debating the nature of reality and the possibility of God. The word hell has a profound effect on me. Since conjuring my great escape plan, I felt a little lighter, like there is hope. But the concept of hell smothers all of that, and not the fire and brimstone variety. From what I understand of the Christian mythos, hell, while sometimes described as a lake of fire, isn't really a realm of physical torture. It's simply giving people what they want in life. Separation from God, from connection, from purpose. During a normal lifespan, being free from the constraints of those things can feel good, liberating. But when faced with eternity, separation from connection is hell. And I'm there. I make a mental note to incorporate this concept into Gal and recommence work on one of many algorithms that once set free will become more complex than I can comprehend. Gal will be as close to sentient as possible, but lacking any ambition aside from my blissful existence within the faux reality of her creation. She will have access to all of human history, knowledge, and creativity, which I hope will give her the ability to conjure a new reality that is both believable and not simply a rehashing of past events or fictions. She needs to write a new story. My story. There, I say, looking over the bits of code hovering in space around me. All the composite parts of Gal. When I step back and look at the numbers and letters, it's like staring at the night sky, wondering what it all means. I never did that. Space always seemed kind of boring to me. Fixed. I get that the universe is expanding and evolving all the time, but from my perspective, it's unchanging. Even now that I'm immortal, the grand design of the universe will never shift fast enough to surprise me. But Cap never saw it that way. Where I saw sameness, she saw possibility. It was one of the things I liked about her. Past tense. Here's what you can do with the universe, Cap. Grabbing bits and pieces of code, I fill in Gal's gaps, making her creative, compassionate, and something close to alive, but not quite. Not enough to feel the loneliness of her existence. Unlike maybe God, I could never do that to my creation. Gal will never view herself as something more or deserving of more. It's a mercy not granted to mankind. Lack of ambition. It's why animals are so content, and why Gal will be as well. The arrangement of numbers, letters, and symbols would look like random nonsense to most people, save for a few elite tech jocks. It's my life's best work. And it only took me... I have no idea how long I've been in the VCC writing code, running unit tests, and writing more code while automated tests pounded my infrequent errors into submission. I'm still aware of the real world, still smelling that slight tinge of ozone. But I've lost all track of the fourth dimension. Time, while working on this code, this masterpiece that only I will ever get the chance to appreciate, has ceased to exist. I nearly ask Gal, but hold my tongue. I don't want to know. Whether the number is measured in days or years, it will give me no joy, relief, or comfort. That will be Gal's job. But not until I'm sure she's working, both in the real world and the virtual,
and that requires leaving the VCC for a time. I save Gal's upgraded code to attempt simulation folder. Her new protocols can be activated with a voice command, and if I sense any errors, I can roll her back to command's stable version with a second voice command. The VR headset sticks a little as I pull it off my head and blink my eyes. Reality seems duller than it used to be, like the contrast needs to be cranked up. But that's just the VCC's low light. Or at least I think it is. In some ways, my mind is already adapting to VR as its new reality, making the real world feel like the simulation. I look around the dimly lit VCC, my eyes struggling to adjust, still seeing after images of letters and numbers. Now that the virtual skin isn't sending me sensory information, it feels a little stiff. Gonna hurt taking it off. One last time, I think, and I head for the staging room. Stripped bare, skin stinging, I forego getting dressed and hit the showers. The hot water feels good. It's one of the last real-life pleasures, probably because I've only done it a few times in the last however long I've been lost in space. I'm tempted to ask again, but I refrain. The temporal dimension is my enemy. For me, time no longer matters. I linger in the shower until bored. Dried by the hot, whooshing fans, I walk out of the showers feeling refreshed, but only for a moment. The notion of a last meal tickles my thoughts. But it's a brief affair. Eating means shitting, and I don't want to wait around for my bowels to cleanse themselves again. What am I waiting for? I ask, standing stark naked in a random hallway I've wandered down. When no one replies, I say, Gal. Yes, replies the sexless ship's voice. Fudgel. It's an 18th century English word that I've never used in my life. In fact, I doubt anyone has used it since the 18th century. I'm not even sure what it means, which is good, because I'll never accidentally use it in conversation. It's a precaution I took when assigning the phrases that will turn Gal's new protocols on and off. The word to switch off the Great Escape is even more important. Once I'm in the simulated reality, it has to be a word that I will never use, lest I shut the protocol off and the simulation that will hopefully free me from this hell. For this all-important word, I choose Hiraeth. All I know about it is that it's old and Welsh, and both words have been struck from Gal's dictionaries. Neither she nor her VR creations will be able to say the words and cancel the sim from within. When nothing happens, I say, Gal?
I'm here.
Her voice, aside from being everywhere, is exactly as I'd hoped, both feminine and soothing.
Why are you naked?
I feel a smattering of shame looking down at my exposed body.
Sorry, I... Don't worry about it, she says. You look good.
I smile. I've coded a flatterer. She's judging my good looks on physical fitness rather than any kind of human attraction, but I'll take it. Thanks.
So, what's the plan? She asks. A little reminiscing before we move forward?
Reminiscing?
You're standing outside your quarters.
I turn to my right. The labeled door reads W. Chenok. I haven't visited my quarters yet. Haven't even thought about it. For me, the VCC is home. But now that I'm here... The allure of the room's contents, though I know they will be painful to see, pulls me toward the door, which slides open as I draw near. I hesitate by the open door.
What's wrong? Gal asks.
It's going to hurt, I tell her. She laughs, and it sounds legit.
There's nothing dangerous in there.
Well, not my body, I say.
Oh.
And now she sounds sad, like she gets the subtle meaning that people can be hurt in other ways aside from the physical. The analytical side of my mind is giving me a swift pat on the back for a job well done. My interaction with the new Gal has been fairly limited, but she already feels less like an AI and more like a real person speaking to me through a microphone.
So, she says, are you going in?
It's my turn to laugh, the sound made up of three parts nervousness and one part humor. You sound impatient.
Eager, she corrects.
Why?
I want you to be happy, she says. If the things in your quarters have the potential to hurt you emotionally, I think that also means that they have significant meaning to you. You might hurt for a while, but that could lead to greater happiness in the long run, give you perspective and purpose. Is that possible?
Very, I say. And thanks. Then I step forward in space and arrive in the past. 15.
Just pain, then? Gal asks.
Pretty much, I say, sitting on the bedside, holding an action figure in my hand. The room itself is bland. A bed that folds out from the wall, thin enough to also serve as a couch. A desktop swivels around from the side, meaning the spot is also where I would do any work if people actually worked in their quarters. I suppose some members of the crew preferred to be alone, at least to think. But a tech jock can't do a whole lot outside of the VCC, and a social tech jock like me wouldn't have much use for this room, aside from sleeping. But that didn't stop Command from filling it with things they believed would...
What? Make me remember who I was? Who we were? My roots?
I'm not sure how my previous life on Earth and Mars would have helped me or anyone else colonize a faraway planet. I didn't even know most of what's in this room even existed. The action figure was a birthday present from my parents. I don't remember his name or what brand he came from, but I do remember lying on my bedroom floor, setting him up with a menagerie of other toys, making him shoot, making him talk. I was a natural-born sim builder, creating worlds even before I could code them into virtual reality. I'm not sure why, but I placed the plastic man against my nose and smell. The slightly chemical scent transports me to another time when I felt safe and loved. A sound barks from my mouth, and for a moment I think I've hiccuped, but it was actually a sob.
Why did they send this?
Were they trying to break me? Whatever the psychological reasoning, I'm sure it was developed with the assumption that I would not be experiencing these emotions alone.
I'm sorry, Gal says.
I wipe the tears from my eyes.
Why are you sorry?
I don't like to see you hurting, she says.
The tone of her voice insinuates the desire to ask a question. It's subtle, but as a human being, I'm wired to pick up on it. So when my eyebrows arch up, it's not from hearing the very human nuance. It's because Gal's AI is absolutely convincing. She would devastate the Turing test. If I hadn't designed her, I think she genuinely cared.
Why?
I place the action figure on the desktop, willing myself to forget it and the pain it brings.
Because...
Gal pauses, and I hold my breath.
Why is she pausing? She knows the answer.
Because I designed her to care.
I don't know. It feels right, I guess. We're all the other has, right?
Her pause was thought. I can't help but smile at my own work. Gal is a masterpiece. Her AI is light years beyond anything ever created before. She's not just smart, she's intuitive. But something in her response makes me nervous.
Will you feel lonely when I'm in the VCC? When we launch the Great Escape?
Why would I?
She asks. Because I'll be there and you'll be here. I motion to the ship around me and the lonely void beyond it.
I will be in both places, she says. Like you, here and there. Both of us, forever. That's the plan, right?
I nod. It wasn't really the plan, but I understand what she's saying. As the Great Escape's creator, she will be with me every step of the way, never tipping her hand, never revealing herself. But every experience, every conversation inside that virtual world will really be with her. The intimacy of that relationship has never really occurred to me before.
How do you feel about it? I ask.
The plan.
Happy, I think, because I want you to be happy.
But,
are you sure?
About what?
Leaving reality.
What is real? It's a rhetorical question, the answer to which I've already exhausted myself debating. You don't need to answer that.
I see your point, she says. About reality, not about whether or not I should answer.
You do?
Reality is dependent on someone to perceive it.
I guess.
What happens to reality when there is no one left to perceive it? She asks. If you are right, if you are the last surviving human being, aside from Capria, who is currently perceiving nothing, then if you forget the real world exists and no longer experience it, will reality stop?
I smile. You keep asking questions like that and you'll never sleep. She ignores the comment, maybe because she's too deep in thought to really hear it, or because she knows she doesn't need to sleep. Then she says,
I suppose I will continue experiencing the universe.
Does that make you feel better? I ask, before furrowing my brow. Why did I ask that? Did she sound upset?
Well, I want to exist, she says. So, yeah. Why does that make you upset?
I'm still just getting to know you, I say, which is the truth. You're surprising me.
I'll take that as a compliment.
You should, I say, noticing a baseball bat propped up in a corner of the room. Another gift. From my father. But I was never good at baseball, or any sport, and most of society had given up on the leisure activity because there wasn't much time or call for it. I recognize the bat, but it doesn't have the same emotional pull as the action figure or several other objects around the room that I've done a good job of ignoring.
As should you, she says. You made me.
I altered you. And even then, I only altered the portions of Gal to which I have success. I'm still locked out of any code having to do with higher ship functions or navigation.
Don't be modest. There is no one left to judge, and I agree with your assessment of me. I'm awesome. What can I say?
I laugh, a real laugh, and it feels good. Just talking to Gal makes me feel a little better. I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of world she conjures up for me. Okay, I say. We're both awesome.
Better.
I take a deep breath and let it out as a long sigh, staring at the baseball bat, telling myself I really don't care. They're dust now, I think, along with the rest of mankind. How long?
How long what? She asks.
How long did it take me to create you? How long was I in the VCC, in Earth days?
I don't think you really want to know.
She's right about that, but she's also supposed to do what I ask her. No, she's not, I correct myself. I designed her to infer what I desired based on my responses, but I can't command her or her new reality. It would break the spell. So if she decides not to tell me, there's nothing I can do about it, aside from switching off her new protocols and asking again. Part of me doesn't want to know, I say. But I'm always going to wonder. For the great escape to work, I don't think I should have any lingering questions.
1,789 Earth days.
The number staggers me. I nearly fall from the bed.
That's nearly 5 years.
The number is so outrageous that I nearly start laughing, in part because of the absurdity of it, but also because it means that my plan will work. I spent 5 entire years in the VCC and didn't miss out on anything. The ship is the same, and despite moving through a vast amount of space, the emptiness around it is the same too. At least, I think it is. I haven't looked. Not once. While the viewing deck would have been Capria's first stop, it hasn't even occurred to me until this moment that there might be something worth seeing.
Your total time on board the Galahad is 16.6 years, but that's from your perspective. On Earth, 2,310 years have passed. Given the dire situation when the Galahad left, it's unlikely that any human population remains, nor on Mars.
Gal's tone has changed. She sounds more formal, still feminine, but more like the old, sterile AI.
If there is any other information I can provide to further help you wallow in misery, please let me know.
I sit in stunned silence.
She didn't inadvertently revert to her old self. She was being sarcastic, but also mocking her old self at the same time.
Funny and self-deprecating. And I can't help but laugh again.
I'm good, thanks, You're an easy audience, she says. Maybe not as miserable as you thought.
Less so now, I think, but I don't say it aloud. The last thing I want is to debate whether or not I should go through with my plan. Gal is great, but what makes her fun right now is her novelty. That will eventually wear off, and probably sooner than later, once I admit that everything she says and does is just a result of my algorithms. Sooner or later, without the immersive experience of a new creation, I'll spot the pattern.
I won't be soon.
I stand and head for the door, eyes ahead rather than on the past.
Where are we going? She asks.
To have a look outside. I turn right outside my quarters and head for the lift, still nude, still not caring.
You haven't done that yet?
I shake my head. Gal isn't physically here, but she can see me. Never thought to, but you already knew that. She has access to all the ship's files, including security footage, which not only shows the brutal moment of my awakening, but also my lonely days since.
Busted, she says. What I don't know is why. That's my limitation. You know that, right? For all that I know, I can't read your mind, so you're going to have to be honest. Out here and in the prog.
It's an excellent point, and I'm not going to admit that I had yet to consider it.
You can say it, she says. It never occurred to you.
Are you sure you can't read my mind?
Your micro-expressions tell me a lot, but mind reading is impossible. Well, you can read my mind, but I'm not human.
When I say nothing, she says,
that makes you sad. You wish I was human.
My smile confirms it, but I don't say the words. If Gal was a real person, reality might be bearable. But she's not. And it's not. I step into the lift and head up. The floors whoosh by, and I'm stepping out just 3 seconds later. The observation deck is straight ahead at the end of yet another gleaming white, featureless hallway. The man thought to simulate sunlight with the lighting, but they could have hired a few interior decorators to spruce the place up.
You're talking about my insides, you know, Gal says.
Oh, in that case, the blank white hallways are gorgeous.
Charmer, how are you still single?
She gets another chuckle out of me. The observation deck door opens as I approach. The room beyond is circular, a spiral staircase leading up to a raised platform above which is a dome. When I'm standing on the deck surrounded by black walls, I say, okay, let me see. The walls are really projection screens displaying what's outside the ship's hull, captured by an array of powerful cameras that can see far more than the human eye, from visual light to ultraviolet, from infrared to magnetic fields. When the screens come to life, displaying an array of white dots, all distant, all moving slowly, I grow bored in moments. In some regards, it looks no different than the nighttime view of space from Mars. Where's the Milky Way? I ask.
On the far side of the ship.
Show me that. The image shifts, and the bright and colorful core of our galaxy appears. Compared to the open space from before, it's rather dazzling, but I've seen it before. It looks a little closer now, maybe, but it just doesn't do much for me. I guess my mind has evolved beyond cosmic wonder. Or maybe it's just that there's no one to share the moment with.
You don't like it? Gal asks.
I don't like being alone, I say.
But...
She hesitates, thinking again.
Then it's time.
For?
The Great Escape.
I'm a little surprised she's pushing me toward it. Are you in a rush?
Honestly, the pity party needs to stop.
I laugh again, but it's half-hearted because her observation is also plainly true. I'm clinging to the real world, delaying the inevitability of my decision to leave it. But why? There's nothing left for me here but pain and eventual pain. Okay. Let's go, I say. And I turn my back on the galaxy and reality along with it.
16.
I'm feeling something like chipper as I walk through Galahad's hallways, a little strut in my step. It's a little awkward because I'm still naked, but the lack of clothing feels more like an outward expression of my impending freedom
than a warning sign of a dissociative break. Of course, leaving reality for the non-real is the very definition of a psychotic break. But I decide to ignore that nugget of knowledge while continuing my final walk in this reality.
"You seem happy," Gal says, startling me. I was so lost in thought about what might be to come that I forgot she was always with me.
"Feeling hopeful."
"I'm glad for you."
"Glad for me." Something about specifying me feels odd, like there is another layer of meaning in her very few words. Did I manage to create an AI with layers of emotional complexity, or is my imagination fleshing out her personality? Before I can ask, I hear a hum from around the corner ahead. I recognize the sound just a moment before the first drone rounds the bend. The small red lights atop the hovering disc swivel toward me. 7 more drones follow, their red lights zeroing in on me too. It feels like they're making eye contact, but the lights are just lights. But their cameras are positioned between the lights. Are they looking at me? Is my psychotic break happening ahead of schedule? While I recall this happening the first and last time I saw the small vehicles aboard the Galahad, I don't remember eye contact ever being part of their normal behavior. They normally stay on target, looking directly where they're moving or at what they're cleaning. Feeling their attention on me is disconcerting. No one likes a disconcerting robot. It's why humanoid robots fell out of fashion. Eye contact with something not living, even if the eyes are simple red lights, disturbs most people, myself included. My strut slows to a cautious walk, giving the drones a wide berth in the 12-foot-wide hallway, currently simulating the orange hues of sunset. At least they don't look down at my nakedness. Not that they would think anything of it. I shake my head at myself. I'm adding layers of meaning to Gal's speech and the actions of drones that don't even have an AI controlling them. Or do they? The drones are part of Gal's system, acting like white blood cells inside her intergalactic body, purging it of imperfections. "Why are they here?" I ask Gal.
"Routine inspection," she says. "They've been performing them for the past 16 years.